Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio with me, Deborah Wolf, as always. And I'm coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, where it is often wet and rainy this time of year. But for those of you who are sitting in the sunshine, we've brought Dr. Jaffe from Southern Florida, 80 degrees and sunny over there. And he's going to come talk to us about a brand new kind of treatment for, well, it's not brand new, but you probably haven't heard of it. I never heard that it was available for pets. So we're going to talk about that. Welcome to the show, Dr. Jaffe.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, when I first looked at the stuff you sent me and I was checking it out, it kind of reminded me a little bit of things I'd seen in the news, almost state-of-the-art treatments for hockey players. Is this where it came from? Did you get this treatment out of the sport world?
No, this hyperbaric therapy has been around from well before the turn of the century and started to be used medically probably into about the mid-60s. And then in the mid-70s, it started to get coverage with health insurance, Medicare, Medicaid. The hyperbaric systems that the athletes use are not the same type of hyperbaric systems used in medical therapy. They are what are called soft chambers and don't reach the same atmospheric pressure that are found in medical facilities.
Can you explain to me what is hyperbaric oxygen therapy, HBOT? What is it? Because
absolutely,
it sounds like water, it sounds like pressure, it sounds like air. I don't know what this is.
Hyperbaric oxygen therapy, or what people refer to as HBOT, it's a medical treatment which enhances the body's natural healing process by exposing the patient to a 100% oxygen environment in a closed space, which is the chamber, and then we increase the atmospheric pressure around them.
Okay, so now I'm thinking of these oxygen bars in Asia where people escape the pollution and they put masks on. I mean, we're sort of hinting this is obviously something we need, our bodies need more of, I guess.
And you can always use oxygen, absolutely.
Always. Okay, now what? How does this, what kind of a dog or cat would need this?
Well, it's not just dogs and cats. We treat reptiles, birds, small mammals, turtles are being treated with hyperbarics. Any animal that has an illness or condition that is a result of hypoxia or low oxygen levels in the tissue, they're all candidates for hyperbaric oxygen therapy.
Okay, now this sounds a little strange to me. I've not ever had a dog or a cat, because that's mostly what I work with, at the vet and been told, oh, your animal has low oxygen levels. So I guess
right,
you get tested first, right? And how is
well,
that?
Well, it's not the low oxygen level that indicates hyperbaric therapy. It will be a disease process. It can be anything from a wound, a bone infection. There are neurological neurological conditions such as disc disease or stroke or bruises or crush injuries like snake bites. Anytime you have inflamed, infected, or diseased tissue, you have tissue that is not receiving the normal levels of oxygen.
Okay. So, and then does this speed up the healing? Is that the idea?
Right. What happens is the hyperbaric oxygen therapy benefits the patient in a few ways. It reduces inflammation. And when you reduce inflammation, you actually provide the ability of the circulating red blood cells that are normally carrying oxygen to reach those areas of diseased tissue or infection. In addition, it also increases the release of stem cells from your bone marrow. And as we all have heard with stem cells, that promotes a delayed and a prolonged healing of the injured or affected tissues.
Now I've heard of stem cell injections for people with bone marrow cancer and things like this, but you're talking about your own body releasing its own stem cells to, is it then depleted? So can it make new stem cells within,
Your stem cells come from your bone marrow. They are stem cells. Stem cells are cells that have not yet differentiated into what they're eventually going to become, whether it's a liver, spleen, skin, etc. So this is a method of releasing your own endogenous stem cells up to 800 times normal levels that are circulating in the body just using hyperbaric oxygen therapy.
Let's just take an example. You've got a dog who's had a stroke. What happens? The people get to the vet, right? Then what?
When you have a stroke in a dog, it's very similar to a person where you have an occlusion of blood flow to a part of the brain. And when you have occluded blood flow, oxygen, red blood cells and oxygen can't get to that part of the brain. So the brain will start to develop low oxygen levels and start to not function properly. By going into a hyperbaric chamber, it provides several benefits. One, it's going to reduce the inflammation of the brain. It's going to put oxygen into that area of the brain that has low oxygen levels, and those oxygen levels will stay elevated even for several hours, even after each treatment is completed. So while the medical therapy that's being provided, and hyperbarics is an adjunctive therapy in many cases, it's used in addition to normal therapy. So while the normal therapy might be designed at relieving that blockage that caused the stroke to begin with, the hyperbaric oxygen treatment is feeding oxygen to the brain so it doesn't become oxygen deprived during this time.
It's making me think of cancer implications and chemotherapy implications. Is it being used that way as well?
It's being used for some types of cancers, and there's a lot of evidence to show that cancers in general tend to grow and the condition progresses due to low oxygen levels. So providing higher or hyper oxygenation, it slows down or halts the progression of some forms of cancer. In addition, it's been shown to actually improve chemotherapy protocols and radiation therapy for some cancers. So there are benefits in oncology, in cancer therapy, using hyperbarics.
How is this administered? Like, does a dog or cat go into a box or a room?
Okay. Well, there's for the small animals, we have a chamber, and it's a chamber it's a cylindrical tube. It's about the size of a love seat. So it's about 4 foot by 6 foot long and wide. And
Dr. Jaffe, I've just been given the cue that we only have a minute left until we have to go to break. So for everyone listening on all the radio stations all over North America and now Europe, Africa, Asia, all kinds of places through shortwave, welcome to the show. We're on Pet Life Radio and we're on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Life, All Paws Pet Talk. And we'll be back in a minute and we're going to be talking more about hyperbaric oxygen therapy. And we'll be talking to Dr. Jaffe, and we'll find out just how this works for dogs and cats. Stay tuned.
And anytime you're near, I love you.
Treat your furry best friend with a clear conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, a true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies at clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
Hey, pet lovers, listen up. Purr Spray Pet, all natural, non-toxic spray for all of your pet problems. Proven safe to use for their skin, eyes, and ears. Helps calm and heal wounds, hot spots, insect bites, and lots more. Will not sting and very safe to use, even for your feathered friends. To find out how you can keep your pets happy and healthy, go to purrspraypet.com. That's purrspraypet.com. purrspraypet.com. Or call us now at 386-310-3924. Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and I'm broadcasting from Camp Good Dog in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, in the middle of the rainforest where it's finally not raining. But we are now reaching shortwave radio operators for the first time ever all over the world, so I want to welcome you and your pets. And welcome to All Paws Pet Talk. Welcome to Smart Animal Talk. We're talking with Dr. Jaffe today. He's broadcasting out of Southwest Florida. And we're doing that all with the help of California. So we're really stretching across North America today. We're talking about HBOT. We're talking about hyperbaric oxygen therapy. And just before we went to break, I asked Dr. Jaffe, how do you, you got your sick dog or your sick cat, you've taken it to the vet, it's undergoing regular treatment, and they recommend HBOT. What happens next? So he was starting to describe the chamber or the room. So Dr. Jaffe, if you wouldn't mind continuing with that, we'd love to hear more about HBOT. Thank you.
Okay. The hyperbaric chamber is a cylindrical tube about 6 feet long, and it's got little porthole windows and lights, a very comfortable environment. So the animal, be it a dog, cat, bird, reptile, or any other animal that will fit into the chamber, they're placed into the chamber. The chamber is filled with 100% oxygen, and then the atmospheric pressure inside the chamber is increased typically to about 1.5 to 2 times normal levels of what the atmospheric pressure is.
Can you see the dog? Can the dog see you, the cat? Like, is it glass?
Well, the tube is steel, and there are glass portholes on both sides at the animal's level. So they can see out, you can see in. It's not soundproof, so if you talk to them or if they bark, you can still hear.
Okay, so if an animal was getting distressed by this, you wouldn't continue, would you?
Well, it would depend, and sometimes it's kind of like going up in an airplane. And I always talk to veterinarians that when they're first treating a pet, realize that it's like a child going up in an airplane. So we like to pressurize the chamber slowly, so they can equilibrate the pressure in their ears. But if along the way, if they seem a little uncomfortable and their ears are a little clogged, they'll be pawing or shaking their head, we'll slow down the pressurization process. And if they don't seem to still get comfortable after that, then we will end the treatment, reverse the process. So in a very short period of time from the onset, we'll know if they're comfortable or not in it.
You know, what I found with other treatments where sometimes you wonder if they really work or don't work because humans are so easily fooled by placebo. I found that animals don't buy into anything. They're there in the moment. They've got their pain. If it works, you can tell. So I've had animals that, you know, I'm booked to take their dog to the vet every year because the dog hates the vet so much. He throws a panic attack and a temper tantrum and the owner just can't even deal with it. And I'll have some special treatment set up for that dog, like acupressure was one case. And the dog loved going to that vet. The dog would practically drag me into that clinic. So clearly the dog knew it was working and felt relief. And I suspect if this is going to work for your dog or cat, after the first time, they're going to recognize it feels good. Is that kind of what happens?
It's not even after the first time. During the first treatment, we will see some of the most uncomfortable patients, restless patients, that into the beginning of the treatment, halfway into the treatment, they lie down, they stop panting, they relax. You can see all of the signs of a comfortable pet and not a stressed or a distressed pet.
Do the cats purr when they're in there, or are they quiet?
Well, that would be really hard. They're not vocalizing loud enough that we can hear them,
right.
But not all cats purr loud enough that you would be able to hear them through the glass. So they're not restless inside when they're mm-hmm. inside, and very, very comfortable.
How safe is it?
Generally speaking, HBOT is very safe. Now, since oxygen is classified as a drug when it's used at 100% concentration, there are some contraindications when treating patients if they're on specific or certain medications. And that's why it's very important that the veterinarian who is performing the treatments needs to be aware of any medication that the pet is on. In addition, there are a couple medical conditions that are contraindicated for HBOT therapy. So again, a good history. This isn't something that is recommended to be run or operated outside of a veterinary facility, because we do need the expertise of a veterinarian to determine safety factors.
Can you tell me about a pet you really remember? Some case that really sticks with you?
Well, as you can imagine, there are so many cases of pets that have had wonderful results after HBOT, but there is one particular case that I remember. It's a 13-year-old dog. His name was Neddington, or is Neddington, I should say. Neddington had been bitten in the face by a water moccasin, and this is in northeast Florida. And his
Nasty.
Face started to swell really bad, a lot of swelling.
Okay.
In addition to the poison, snake bites cause the tissue to swell, and when this happens, a lot of that tissue doesn't get oxygen, and it can start to die, and then a lot of snake bite patients end up needing surgery to remove the dead tissue. Well, Neddington's swollen face made it really hard for him to breathe as well. After his first HBOT treatment, the swelling in Neddington's face had dropped about 4 inches. less than 20.
4 inches? What kind of dog was
down.
He? What kind of dog was he? Is he?
He's a Mastiff mix.
Okay, so he's a big dog.
He's a pretty large dog.
4 inches. Gee. Okay.
And in less than 24 hours, the swelling was back to normal. The face had gone back to normal. So very remarkable, wonderful outcome, and very memorable.
Well, since you mentioned this, I'm just going to tie this in. There's this great little clip. It was on the news here in Canada, but it's also, well, local Vancouver news. It's also on the internet. There's this Mastiff Lab cross in Seattle whose owner is a smoker, and the owner admits he's often sort of keeping the dog, you know, slowing the dog down. The dog got used to taking the bus to the dog park. And so when the owner is having a smoke and isn't ready to jump on the bus, the dog goes by himself. And the bus driver and all the people who ride the bus and everyone is quite used to this lab mastiff climbing on the bus, finding a free seat, jumping up on the seat, looking out the window, waiting till his stop at the dog park, and then letting himself off. So I think that says a lot about the people of Seattle, actually. Well done, Seattle. Okay, so we're talking on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and we're talking to Dr. Jaffe. I was just thinking, Dr. Jaffe, about, you mentioned counterindications, so things that might be made worse. And when I think of pressure, the pressure to end the segment on time. We're almost done with this section, with this segment of radio. So we're going to come back, all you listeners, Smart Animal Talk listeners, we're going to come back in a minute and talk with Dr. Jaffe about this topic. But I'm wondering about things like sinus problems, breathing problems, ear infections, migraine headaches in humans, I suppose, but probably dogs too. Would these things not be made worse by high pressure or a plane ride? Like the little kid who has a slight ear problem when he gets on the plane, and by the time he lands, the little baby, he's got to go to the emerge because his little problem has become deafening for all the passengers. So we're going to come back and talk a little more about HBOT and some other topics because we do have a veterinarian. He's not getting away that easy. Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. If you want to ask the vet your questions, Dr. Jaffe is here, 1-888-627-6008, 1-888-627-6008. Call us and we'll answer your questions, and we'll be back to talk more about HBOT. Stay tuned to Smart Animal Talk.
Itchy dog allergy sad? Did you know that our dogs suffer from the same pollen, dust mite, and mold allergies that we do? Now, veterinarian dermatologist Dr. Christian has formulated Doggy Goo. Doggy Goo is a peanut butter treat for your dog. But Doggy Goo also sublingually builds tolerance to 10 pollens, 2 mites, and 3 molds 100% naturally. Try Doggy Goo. Your dog will Doggy Goo lick it up. Call 855-246-2426. The number again is 855-246-2426 or on the web www.healthygoo.com. Goo spelled G-O-O.
Scratch it.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Deborah Wolf, and I'm calling in from Camp Good Dog. That's a boarding kennel up near Vancouver, BC. If you want to check out the happy dogs at Camp Good Dog, all you got to do is go on Facebook, type in Camp Good Dog, and you will see them frolicking in the rainforest. You can see it online and not have to get wet like we do when we walk our dogs out here. But I've been doing this a long time, radio for about 20 years, and traveling with my bad dog show, proving that there's no such thing as a bad dog. All dogs want to be good dogs. I train the worst dogs live on stage, having never met them, and I get instant results. That's how good dogs are. I really trust dogs. Dogs are good. If you've got a bad one, you can call me with your problem, or a bad cat even, because they're good too. They're just misunderstood by us silly humans. So right now today we've got Dr. Jaffe, and if you've got a medical question, 1-888-627-6008. Dr. Jaffe, when should you not use HBOT? Is there a time or a medicine or blood condition something?
Yeah, pretty much the two primary conditions we do not want to put patients in the hyperbaric chamber, and that's if, one, they are unconscious. We worry about an unconscious patient that if it vomits, that they'll aspirate, and we can't get to them quick enough to stop that process. The other is if they have what's called a pneumothorax, or if they have free air in their chest. If the free air is located in the chest and they're treated with hyperbarics, it can cause air embolism. It can cause other conditions that would make matters worse. So those are pretty much the two absolute contraindications. With regards to medications, there are some medications that don't do well with hyperbarics with regards to organ function, and there might be withholding times where they may have to be off of them for a certain number of hours prior to going into the chamber.
How easily can people access this? Are there a load of these chambers around North America?
Well, right now we have 25 working chambers throughout the country, throughout the United States, and we are getting ready to have four more installed over the next 2 months throughout the United States.
So how would people, if they're listening right now and they think, you know, maybe my pet could benefit, how do they check that out?
The easiest and quickest way to do it is go to our website, www.hvmed.com, or they can call our office at 800-928-6886. On the website, we actually have a map of the United States showing each location, and there are links to those veterinary websites that are operating our chambers.
Well, personally, Dr. Jaffe, how did you discover this? What made you jump into this?
Well, I had been practicing veterinary medicine for about 20 years in private practice. I had my own animal hospital. And during that time, in the last few years, one of my colleagues nearby had a hyperbaric chamber at his veterinary practice. And I had seen him treating patients and seeing the results. And I just thought this was the future. This is going to be something that we need in veterinary practices as common as an X-ray machine or a blood test machine. It really makes a difference in the outcome of many medical conditions. So after I ended up selling my private practice, I came on board as the medical manager to HVM, Hyperbaric Veterinary Medicine, and I've been with them now for 2 years, traveling around the country, helping veterinarians add hyperbarics to their facility, as well as training them on the indications and use of it.
Nice. So you really see the results. Does it speed it up by that much?
Dramatically in many instances. There are some conditions that you will see immediate results after just the first treatment. Some treatments take longer. A lot of it depends on how severe the problem is. But conditions such as arthritis, slip discs, stroke, carbon monoxide poisoning, burns, you see results so quickly. And the veterinarians that are using hyperbarics will attest that as part of the complete treatment plan, that they see their patients responding so much faster than they had with the same treatment, just without HBOT.
Is it available for humans as well?
It's been available for humans medically. Many of the human hospitals in the United States, Canada, and worldwide do have hyperbaric oxygen therapy, and it's been used in human hospitals for over 30 years now. There are only certain conditions that the medical insurance companies will reimburse for, and the many conditions that the American Medical Association approves hyperbarics for, but the insurance won't reimburse for, have to be administered in off-site, off-hospital property hyperbaric medical centers, private centers for those purposes.
When you first said at the start of the interview, I asked you, okay, so how do you get a cat or dog into the chamber? And you kind of broadened it. You said, well, it's not just cats or dogs. And I know this is a little bit cynical, but I had to think, okay, a mouse, a hamster, a lizard cost $10 at the pet store. But I guess mm-hmm. people would treat their $10 pet with an expensive treatment if they love it. So how much is this treatment? Because it seems to me like this should be very expensive. It sounds very expensive.
It really depends on the, you know, it's like any other treatment. It's a demographically priced item. It seems nationwide that the price range can be anywhere from $125 upwards of $200, depending on what they're treating for, how long the treatment, how many treatments they're going to be getting. And many of the facilities offer multiple treatment package price breaks, which is really nice.
I see. So it's a case of shop around a little bit.
Well, you don't really have a whole lot of shopping around because they're not really located on every corner. But I will say this, and that is almost all of the pet insurances that are currently available, if the animal has a medical condition that is covered by their pet insurance, almost all pet insurances will also reimburse for hyperbaric therapy.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, that's really good to know. We're coming to a break again. We're going to keep Dr. Jaffe on the line. If you've got medical questions, we've already had one sent in about a baldness problem on a breeding female dog. So I'm going to ask you that. Another question, a very general question about vaccines. And someone asking about worms, which, I always have nightmares after I go into some kind of parasite talk. So I'll try not to listen to your answer on that one. We're going to come back and talk to Dr. Jaffe. If you have a medical question about your animal, 1-888-627-6008. And I'm your host, Deb Wolf, and we're on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Stay tuned.
Scratch it. Is your itchy dog allergy sad? Did you know that our dogs suffer from the same pollen, dust mite, and mold allergies that we do? Now, veterinarian dermatologist Dr. Christian has formulated Doggy Goo. Doggy Goo is a peanut butter treat for your dog. But Doggy Goo also sublingually builds tolerance to 10 pollens, 2 mites, and 3 molds 100% naturally. Try Doggy Goo. Your dog will Doggy Goo look it up. Call 855-246-2426. The number again is 855-246-2426. Or on the web, www.healthygoo.com. Goo spelled G-O-O.
Scratch it.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio, which means you're listening to me, Deborah Wolf, your host. And today we have Dr. Jaffe. If you've got a question for the good doctor, 1-888-627-6008. We already had some sent in. So one question I have for you, Dr. Jaffe, if you're ready.
Sure.
Okay, so the person has a breeding female. They don't tell me what type, but they do say it's a medium-sized dog, and they've been breeding her for years. This has never happened before, but just as she was about to go into the heat cycle, she started losing the hair on her rump. Now, to me, that's not unusual, but they seem to think this is cause for freaking out. So kind of ties into our third question today. They dewormed her. I don't see any evidence of worms, but they're going to do it again in after 2 weeks, just in case that was the problem. They're wondering, what's the problem? Why is she losing a bald spot just between her, you know, sort of just in front of her rump area?
Well, probably one of the first things that comes to mind is a condition where with elevated levels of estrogen, and if it's related to a heat cycle, they can actually, and it's not that common, but excessive levels of estrogen can cause hair loss. And that's something that is easily determined with a blood test. Getting hormonal blood testing, whether it's growth hormone or estrogen or progesterone, would definitely be the first step I'd recommend if this is something that only happens during the heat. Now, I would expect following the end of the heat, I would expect the hair to come back. If it doesn't, then definitely finding out what's going on with the hormone levels would be the first step.
Yeah, you know, I do breed dogs, and before I bred dogs myself, I was sort of a doggy midwife for many, many people. And it's my experience that Shelties, the Sheltie breeders refer to it as they blow their coat. So Sheltie right. females will often lose their coat completely during heats or during puppy rearing and nursing times. Not unusual at all. So I think they've almost, I mean, it's unfortunate for the dog that she gets this little bald spot, but in a way, it's a really good way to tell she's about to come into heat. You've got yourself a sure. little flag, so that's not bad. And I would suspect it'll be self-correcting when she gets pregnant or when, you know, when this is over with. But as you say, yeah, it's a little alarming. Now, if their dog wasn't a mating female, was spayed or neutered, just then it would be something else, wouldn't it? It would probably be fleas, I would think.
No, it could be, a lot of it would again depend on, you know, in Florida, anytime anything affects the skin or the hair, first thing we always think about here in Florida is fleas. In January, in, you know, Maine or up in the northern areas where fleas aren't really a problem in that area, then there might be an underlying, again, if it's a focal, if it's an isolated skin condition, you know, there might just be one type of problem in that area that might not be the same in another geographic area. So you kind of have to look where the animal lives. I don't know where this animal is from, you know, and perhaps the first thing to do is part the hair, especially if it's a long-haired animal, and see, do you see any evidence of bites? It could be insect bites. Do you see any what is called flea dirt, which is little black specks to evidence that there are fleas there? If the skin looks broken or infected, you know, that can narrow down a lot of the causes. A lot of times you just really have to get in there and look at it, and that can really open up to possibly what the answer is without having to go through many tests.
You know, when you talk about fleas, I kind of have this attitude of, you know, when in doubt, rule it out. Because you're going to go through all kinds of expensive vet tests and procedures. And if it's just fleas, get rid of them and you'll know, right? So I kind of start with that. And so many people don't want to even consider that their house has fleas. They just don't want to think about it. They don't want to go there. But fleas jump off other animals. They jump onto grass. They jump onto you when you're in a pet store, when you pet a dog or cat, wherever you are, off people's clothing at work, on the bus. I mean, you can have an immaculate house and still get fleas. And even, I would suggest, even if you live in a cold climate, they can live in your house and keep going and going and going through the winter. So you do need to think about just rule them out. So I would start with that if I had an itchy, scratchy problem. We do have another question for you, Dr. Jaffe, and this is about vaccines. I noticed this here because at my kennel, you can't come unless you've got vet papers showing you're all up to date on your vaccines. And some of the dogs come with, you know, they had it this year and it's going to be due in 5 years. And other dogs, it's going to be due in 2 years. And other dogs, it expires in 3 years. And so this question, this person is writing to me. I had my dog vaccinated for rabies last year. It wasn't the first time. Why does it say that it expires this year? Doesn't rabies last longer?
Well, it goes to what's called duration of immunity. And when you're using a vaccine such as rabies or parvo or any of those manufactured vaccines, there's a particular, based on what the labeling is as to how long the duration of immunity. Now, one thing we do know is vaccines do last longer than what the actual expiration on the label says, but for something like rabies, which is a human communicable disease, unfortunately, you have to go by the county, the state, the area's regulation or laws on how often to vaccinate for rabies. Some areas, some states, such as Florida, will recognize a rabies vaccine once every 3 years. But you can't go longer than that unless your animal has a health condition and your veterinarian writes a letter exempting them. And that is for public health safety issues because, you know, it's the one disease that dogs and cats can get that can give to people, and it is fatal. So the health department, the government doesn't want to risk human life over how long does the vaccine actually last.
Well, there was an outbreak all around the city of Montreal and then in the Northeast, and it spread like crazy. It was in foxes and squirrels and dogs, and it was just going like crazy. And that kind of makes me wonder. You know, even recently, I had a woman call up trying to book two dogs who were rescue dogs, I think from Mexico. I'm not exactly sure. Some kind of, you know, organization that brought them in, and she adopted them, fostered them, kept them. And she wanted to send her dogs, and I said, you know, sure, but they have to be vaccinated. Her vet recommended, because of their terrible past and, I guess, compromised immune systems as a result of poor nutrition, perhaps, or living a hard life, or maybe diseases they'd had. I don't know the whole story, but her current vet decided they should not be vaccinated at all for anything. And this just makes me shudder. How often is this going on? And then how at risk is your dog when you let it drink at the Starbucks bucket, or you let it go to the dog park? If there's people out there rescuing dogs from all over the world and not vaccinating them. Now, I assume the dog had to be vaccinated to come into the country. So there at least was one set. But now, isn't this dangerous?
Well, the only vaccine that is required on the health certificate to enter the United States, for example, because that's where I live, is rabies. Disease-free and vaccinated current for rabies. But other diseases, such and more, and in my opinion, much more common and devastating, such as distemper or parvo, those are not required on the health certificate because those are not human communicable diseases. So the government, the USDA, which is our regulating body for veterinarians and the transport of animals, only is interested in the current status of the rabies vaccine.
Well, I began years and years ago as a vet tech, and I remember the parvo puppies, you know, and the chances of them surviving and how awful it was for the people who owned them. Parvo is nothing. It's nothing to fool around with. I don't know how people can risk it. I mean, doesn't it last in your soil for 8 years? Isn't it really, really a nasty one, parvo?
Well, parvovirus, first of all, the vaccines today are outstanding. And one thing I tell all of my clients with regards to vaccines is I believe the vaccine is good for 3 years. Once your dog is vaccinated as an adult, do I think it could last longer than that? Yes, I do. However, I'm not comfortable since we don't have a lot of duration of immunity tests to verify how long it lasts. So I was recommending the parvo distemper vaccine every 3 years to my clients, especially if their pets went out at dog parks, grooming parlors, areas with high risk, or walking neighborhoods with areas with high risk exposure or high likelihood exposure to other dogs. Because if a dog has parvo, it stays viable and alive in the area where that animal pooped for actually 11 months through rain.
11
through freezing,
months, okay. I thought it was years. I was even more terrified. But I just, as a kennel owner, there's no way I'm making that exception. And if you are sending your dog to be kenneled or to go somewhere where there's a lot of exposure, like a doggy daycare, you want to make sure they're insisting on vaccines for everybody. Really, you do. Okay, so we'll be back in 30 seconds or so. We got to take a break. We're with Dr. Jaffe. I'm going to ask him a little bit more about this vaccine thing. A little bit about worms, because you're making me, because you sent me that question. Somebody send me a nicer question. 1-888-627-6008. You can ask the doctor yourself. Stay tuned. Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
Treat your furry best friend with a Clear Conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, a true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies at clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
Hello, you're listening. listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and I am calling you from Camp Good Dog. You can look up my doggies and my doggy visitors on Facebook, Camp Good Dog, anytime you like. I'm also relaunching my website coming up pretty soon, and that's DeborahWolfOnline.com, but it's not there yet, coming soon. So right now we've got Dr. Jaffe on the line, and Dr. Jaffe, we did have a question about worms. Are you ready for this one?
Sure.
Okay, so they think that their neighbor's dog had worms, their neighbor told them, so they dewormed their dog and their kids and themselves, and they saw in the backyard a pile of number two that looked like it had spaghetti in it, even though they'd never given the dog spaghetti. You know where I'm going with this. Okay, so they want to know, is that the worm? And then they want to know, the pharmacist told them to do their kids twice. Does that mean they should do their dog twice too? And do they really need to do their kids twice? Because they're kind of skeptical about medicine and would rather, and this is what they're asking. They want to know, can they use garlic or herbs? Is there anything else they can use besides the medicine the pharmacist recommended for the humans and the vet recommended for the dog?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I cannot give any medical advice on children. So they'll have to ask the pharmacist or pediatrician. I stick to the four-legged children, not to the two-legged children.
Definitely say go with what your doctor said, go with what your pharmacist said. That they know what they're talking about, and I'm sure you asked them about garlic and other things, and I'm sure they said no for a reason. So let's stick with what they said, because you know the worm thing is really bad, and if you only. If your doctor or pharmacist said your kids need to be treated twice and you don't treat twice and they're right, then you don't get rid of it. You made no impact. You're going to have worms with your dog, you, and your kids for a long time, right? Like you really got to nip this in the bud. And the same with the dog. Does the dog need twice?
Well, almost all worms that a dog or cat can get require absolutely a twice dosing. And the reason for that is the deworming medication only kills the adults. So what happens is the first dose kills all the adults inside, and there are still eggs inside. So over the course, depending on the type of worm, most will hatch in about 2 weeks. So you should always do the second dose at about the three-week interval. So that way, when the eggs hatch, you kill the second round with the second dose.
Now, that's interesting because the email I'm reading, they were told 2 weeks. So if they did it in 2 weeks, they'd have to actually do it a third time. So talk about for the dog, not talking about the kids, the dog, right?
We used to say 2 weeks, but not every egg hatches at exactly 14 days. Okay. Some might do 15 days. So you don't want to miss that window. I would recommend to do it at 3 weeks, or you can do it any time after 15 or 16 days before 3 weeks, and you'll take care of the second round, yes.
Okay, and so that spaghetti was not spaghetti, right?
I doubt it. Not if it's moving.
Okay. All right. And that's said about the worms, people. Send us your questions and don't give me nightmares, please. All right. So we're talking on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And we're talking with Dr. Jaffe. You know, we did get an email during the show while I was talking about, you know, when in doubt, I would suggest think that your dog or cat has fleas, think that your house has fleas, and just spray, get rid of it. Use the stuff on the back of the neck that prevents fleas in your animal for a whole month. And we got an email about that saying, isn't that stuff toxic? Aren't flea collars toxic? How do I know that it's not going to be harming me and my kids? So I want to ask you that. What do you recommend for people? You're in Florida, which I think you're telling me is flea central. So what happens? What do you do? Are these flea collars effective?
Flea collars, the problem is fleas, unless they actually walk across the flea collar, they're really not going to get exposed to it. And those are pretty dangerous, and they do contain a lot of pesticides. And fleas in general are not hard to kill. Baby shampoos are going to kill fleas. What you want to do is you want to break the cycle. You want to get the fleas before they feed on your pet, and then they lay about 50 eggs a day. So you can imagine over the course of a couple weeks, you go from one flea to thousands of fleas. So you want to break that cycle as fast as you can. And there are a couple topical products that are my favorites. And why I like them so much is they do not get absorbed through the skin. They stay completely external to the pet. So when people are concerned that it is poisoning their pet, these things do not pass through the skin. They spread across in the oil layer of the skin of the pet, and they give a nice barrier of protection for about, when they say, up to 4 weeks. Not every area. The flea products down here barely last 4 weeks in Florida. The fleas are very tough, and they are year-round. So I always recommend it about every 3 weeks to repeat it on the pets down here.
And I suppose the pets down there are swimming a lot, too. That must increase, you know, or does it not get it out of the water?
Although they're waterproof and bathing doesn't wash it off and swimming isn't supposed to, it does reduce how long the product lasts. So, you know, again, it's very easy
to see. Yeah, you know what? Any woman who colors her hair knows just what we're talking about. Uh-huh, color fade. I don't think so. Okay, we got it. So, yeah, the more swimming your pet does, obviously, the more wear and tear. If your pet stays at home in the apartment and hardly ever goes out, it probably might last a month. But if your pet is a dog park visitor, goes doggy daycare, boards at a kennel, and visits the beach, okay, you're looking at sooner rather than later. We had another question come up, and this I thought was really thoughtful. It came up a couple of weeks ago. Someone was asking me in an email about the difference between homeopathy and vaccinations. And because they're saying that, you know, vaccinations are basically homeopathic, the strategy behind them. And yet the American Veterinary Medical Association came out recently, I think a year ago, saying they're not in favor of homeopathy, but they're definitely in favor of vaccines. Oh, Dr. Jaffe, we only have a couple of minutes left. What do you think about that conundrum?
That is definitely a conundrum. I am not, I have to admit that I am not a fully versed, knowledgeable veterinarian on homeopathy. So I really probably am better off avoiding this question so I don't give misinformation on it.
Okay, that's all right. We only have a few seconds left, maybe a minute. Would you like to tell people again how they can find out where to get, well, where they can get hyperbaric oxygen therapy, where they can find Chambers?
Absolutely. If they're looking for a map of the United States where our Chambers are located, our website is www.hvmed.com, and then they can look up the practice, find one nearby. And if you are in an area, be it Canada or the United States or anywhere in between worldwide, if your veterinarian would be interested in having me contact them to obtain one of our hyperbaric chambers, they can go to the website, they can call us up, and I'll be happy to talk to them.
Well, thank you very much for joining us and taking our questions today, Dr. Jaffe.
You're very welcome. It was my pleasure.
Thank you. Okay, everybody on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, you shortwave listeners, welcome to our pack. We're all going to be back next week. Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk, I'll have a new guest. And we'll be talking dogs and cats. So send me your email questions. Send me your cute pictures and your less than a page stories about why your dog's so bad or your cat's so bad. And I'll fix the problem live on the air at Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk. Be good to your animals.
And anytime you're near.